Chapter 18. Planet Hoth. 0 days after Plan K-10.
For some unknowable time, Namir could not tell the difference between reality and dreams. Intellectually, he understood the distinction. Knew it was imperative that he sift one from the other, knew his life and the lives of others were at stake. But what he clung to as fact seemed gossamer, prone to dissolve at a touch, while what he tried to discard as nightmare seemed fixed in his memory. There were certain truths he was confident of. He was lying on the ice-slick floor of a half-collapsed passageway, drifting in and out of consciousness. He believed Echo Base had fallen, that he'd fought stormtroopers with his friends, and lost. He was less certain whether his friends had died. He had seen the bodies of Beak and Brand, could picture images of slaughter, of an Imperial Walker crushing Roach, of a blade of energy bisecting Roja. But were they real? He remembered climbing out of the rubble once, twice, only to be struck down again. Namir recalled something Gadrin had told him shortly after he had joined Twilight Company. The alien had taken it upon himself to educate Namir about the nature of the universe, about hyperspace and comets and stellar masses, and he'd spoken of a singularity in the galactic deep core. In the middle of everything, Gadrin said, there was a black hole that devoured all light and energy, exerting a gravitational pull more powerful than 1,000 suns. The entire galaxy rotated around this crux of darkness. Namir remembered a man in black armor who could not be killed. Darth Vader. In time, Namir defied a pressure upon his back, rose onto his hands and knees, and felt a ripple of nausea. He didn't believe he had ever felt nauseated in dreams, and took that as a reason to stand. He nearly fell, caught himself, and stepped forward. His chest heaved, but nothing emerged from his lips except his steaming breath. His ribs were sore where his rifle had lain beneath him. He crossed the corridor to test his balance. He found Beak dead, cut in two. Beak had been the one killed by Vader, not Roja. Memories began to align. Vader was real. Namir leaned against the wall. Stay awake, he told himself. Unconsciousness is death. Staying here is death. Then he let the chill surface guide him several meters down the passageway. There he found Roja. A hole burned in his jacket over his heart. Roja lay atop Howl, who was cold when Namir knelt to touch him. Howl had no obvious combat wounds. The untreated head trauma he'd suffered in the command center collapse had apparently proven fatal. Namir laughed at that thought and raised a hand to gingerly touch his own head. The hood of his jacket was damp. His glove was spotted with red when he lowered it. Howl always wanted you to be more like him. Maybe you'll get to die the same way. He knew he should have felt other emotions, any emotions, at the captain's death. And Beak's and Roach's. But numbness and shock were his allies. His priority was survival, escape, warmth, find Twilight Company. But Twilight Company wasn't on Hoth. He remembered that now. He'd been close to the hangar when the stormtroopers had attacked. He tried to recall which direction he needed to take down the passage and found the effort made him dizzy. The solution came to him when a snowflake touched his chin and melted there. The hangar doors were open. Follow the breeze. He trudged slowly down the corridor, his steps becoming more assured the longer he stayed upright. He hefted his rifle, examined it for damage. There were no warning lights. He thought of disassembling it, checking it over more thoroughly, but he couldn't risk the time when more stormtroopers might find him at any moment. When he looked up again, Ivari Chalice was standing in his way 3 meters down the passage. She, too, was following the breeze upwind, swaying slightly as she walked. She moved even slower than Namir and kept one hand held to her chest. Namir tried to say her name, got it out the second time. Chalice turned and swung a fist at him. He caught the blow easily, and she seemed to lean into it, crumpling as she lost her balance. He started to reach out, but she pulled back and stumbled upright. Her eyes were glassy and bloodshot. Her jacket was covered in snow and dirt and specks of blood. Beneath her chin, across her neck and down her throat, her skin had turned the intense red of a fresh bruise. She looked like she'd been hanged and freed from the noose too late. "We need to go," Namir said. Chalice's lips curled into something like a snarl. She said nothing. Namir stared at her, waited. Chalice too seemed like something out of a nightmare, and he wondered whether he was unconscious after all. There was frustration and urgency in his voice as he asked, "Can you walk? We need to go." He reached out to grip her shoulder. This time Chalice caught him by the wrist. When she spoke, it was in a hoarse, pained creak.
"Yes,"
she said, the word drawn into two syllables. That was enough for Namir. He strode past her and continued on his way. He didn't hear Chalice's footsteps at first, but soon they echoed a short distance behind him. He followed the breeze. The farther they walked, the more attuned he became to the sounds of the bass. The ice and stone were still settling, cracking, collapsing. He heard the popping of fires and electric wiring. Twice he heard faint blaster shots. The battle was over, perhaps, but it hadn't been finished for long. He heard Chalice, too. Mostly she was breathing through her nose with a soft whistle, but now and then she took a rasping, racking gasp of air. She said nothing as they passed through the darkness, climbed over rubble, and squeezed through doors frozen ajar. The hangar, when they arrived, was dazzlingly bright. Beyond the great doors to the cavern, Namir could see a lush blue sky, and the rays of a low-hanging sun swept paths of intense illumination between patches of shade. Most of the ships were gone. Two X-Wing starfighters were burning. Twilight Shuttle sat apparently untouched to one side. "It's our lucky day," Namir said. He didn't smile, and Chalice didn't laugh. The shuttle rattled and shook as it skimmed the runway toward the hangar doors. Namir had skipped the usual pre-flight checks. Not because he feared to lose precious seconds, but because he'd never launched a starship on his own. He asked Chalice for instructions, but she had only sat in the co-pilot seat and stared blankly out the viewport. So warning lights blinked and sparks and fire trailed the vessel. But when it exited the hangar bay, it lifted into an endless expanse of blue above and white below, leaving the ruin of the battlefield and its war machines behind. Namir wanted to stare into the sky, let himself be hypnotized by emptiness, and return to the numbness of the dark passageway. He couldn't, he knew. Not yet. "They'll be watching for ships," he said. "They'll have a blockade around the planet. We don't have the firepower to punch through." His fingers were tingling as warmth crept into the ship. He watched Chalice, waiting for an answer. She didn't so much as turn. "They'll shoot us down," he said, voice a little louder, a little harsher. "You need to talk us past. Send a clearance code like you did when we boarded the freighter." Chalice stiffened in her seat and seemed to suppress a wince as if she'd just aggravated an injury. Still, she did not speak. Namir glanced at the control panels, tried to guess how long they had before exiting Hoth's upper atmosphere and finding themselves faced with a fleet of Star Destroyers. Outside, wisps of fog and cloud splashed against the viewport. "Chalice!" he snapped, and reached out to grasp her shoulder. Now she did look at him, her expression full of loathing and bitterness. Still, the silence. "I don't care if it hurts to talk," Namir said. "I don't care what happened back there. You're going to try this." He kept one hand on her shoulder. The other fumbled with his rifle still slung across his chest and raised it toward Chalice. They were so close that the muzzle scraped the cloth of her jacket. "You're going to try," he said. Chalice kept staring her hateful stare. Then she turned to the console and with swift, jerky movements began tapping buttons and entering codes. Next, she opened a comm frequency.
"This,"
she said in a voice so rough and full of breath that Namir worried no one would hear.
"It's Blizzard Force Unit 2287. Requesting."
She stopped, and her mouth opened and closed like that of a gasping fish before she resumed.
"Berth for captive shuttle."
She closed the frequency and leaned forward, her shoulders and chest heaving. She looked like she was trying to cough, but she made no sound. The shuttle broke through gray clouds and the viewport turned black, stars glittering in the darkness like frost. The massive wedges of Star Destroyers stretched out to either side. Namir's instinct was to pour power into the engines, to speed away from Hoth and through the blockade. Instead, he waited. If he gave away the bluff too soon, the shuttle would be annihilated. "Get through the blockade first," he told himself. "Get far enough from the planet to hit light speed. They'll be suspicious, but by then it'll be too late." He tapped at the navicomputer, let it plot the first jump to hyperspace. He'd figure out where the flotilla's coordinates had been stored later. The ship must have logged them, but for now, anywhere away from a Hoth was good enough. A light on the console flashed. One of the Star Destroyers was attempting to contact them. Namir glanced at Chalice. She was staring straight ahead. They were nearly through the blockade, nearly out of Hoth's gravity well, when sensors showed a handful of ships moving swiftly toward them. TIE fighters, Namir imagined. But their opportunity to catch the shuttle had passed. The navicomputer signaled that a course was plotted. Namir reached out and gingerly pulled on the hyperdrive accelerator. Stars became streaks of light, and Namir felt himself crushed against his seat. Then the viewpoint became a whirl of azure energy, and the ship settled again. He checked the readouts as if expecting to see the TIE fighter still in pursuit, glanced around the cockpit as if a stormtrooper had stowed aboard. It took long moments for his body to accept that he was safe, for the instincts of 100 battles to subside and give way to true, deliberate thought for the first time since he'd woken. He was alive. Roja and Beak were dead. The captain of the Twilight Company was dead. The rebel fleet was scattered. He leaned back in his seat, shivering in the heat of the shuttle and clinging to the shreds of his numbness.